It's the roundtable, Tuesday morning, 9:13. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, who is recovering right now as we speak. Hello, Joe Donahue, if you're listening, I hope you're feeling better, sir. It's the roundtable panel, and we have a good panel here today. A former associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, is here. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Very well, thank
Retired.
You.
You look very relaxed.
It's a beautiful day outside.
Yeah. In the neighborhood.
Yes, it's a beautiful. Well, haven't seen it yet, but I want to.
My oldest daughter did, and she said it was fantastic.
Oh, that's great.
And I couldn't even get the kids to watch Mr. Rogers back in the early 2000s. Political consultant Libby Post is making it a doubleheader. She is here 2 days in a row. Hello, Libby.
Hello, Ray.
How are you doing today?
I'm just fine.
The Empire Report's J.P. Miller is here, not wearing a WAMC hat, and that caused a bit of consternation this morning as he walked in, but I think we'll rectify that situation. Nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
And Alan Shartok, who is wearing a WAMC hat, is here, and good morning, sir.
Good morning. I'm very excited because all of a sudden a whole bunch of people who generally give money towards the end of the year are remembering that WAMC is a big part of their lives and is sending money, and nobody ever solicited it, you know, just coming in. And because, you know, for some people there's some tax saving. That's been changed a little bit by the president, but and some people just love it so much they say, okay, if we're going to do things at the end of the year, We'll set some money into WAMC, and you open up an envelope marked 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12202.
06?
Is that 06. What it is?
06.
I believe it's 06. 12206, I think. I yeah, I'm getting a high
for
sign.
For the P.O. box or for the street address?
Oh, God, now you're killing me.
All I know is that we're at 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York.
That's
I know that.
12206.
We should check the P.O. box at that other zip code. Maybe there's a bunch of checks in there.
You know what, yeah. J.P., you make a great point. Give that man a hat. The panel is now in session. Panel at WAMC.org if you want to write us this morning. Now, remember, Sarah LeDuc says, you got to proofread these things or you will be cut off and you will not make the grade. So proofread it, no abbreviations if you please, no links, no attachments, and please keep them brief. If it's 2, 3, 4, 5 paragraphs, that also is an instant disqualifier.
And
watch.
We reserve the right to read parts of letters.
Right.
In other words, if somebody's going to write five paragraphs, we might read the first sentence or two.
Right. Well, you're the letter reader.
I am.
So you do what you so choose.
You got that right.
Well, now that we've gotten that squared away, a federal judge has ordered former White House counsel Donald McGahn to appear before Congress in a setback. Oh, my gosh. We just started the show, and here she is, fashionably late. Rosemary Armeo's here. How about a round of applause, Rosemary?
So sorry.
Come on, take a seat. We'll do a show. So as I was saying, a federal judge has ordered former White House counsel Donald McGahn to appear before Congress in a setback to President Trump's effort to keep his top aides from testifying. The outcome could lead to renewed efforts by House Democrats to compel testimony from other high-ranking officials, including maybe former National Security Advisor John Bolton. Who wants first?
I'd like to ask a question.
Okay.
And my question is, how can they compel an attorney to testify? Wouldn't a lot of their interactions be covered by attorney-client privilege? And I apologize if that's a dumb question.
Well, it's not a dumb question, but the question is, are the people clients? Is the president a client of every one of these people? That's the question.
This ruling didn't decide about privilege at all, including executive privilege, not just lawyer privilege. Just says he can't not show up. He can come and say, I can't answer to every question.
Oh, so he can go in and still invoke those things. And
that's
I assume that I didn't think that would apply for Bolton or Mick Mulvaney, but just with McGahn, I'm surprised that they would try with an
attorney. McGahn every time can say, I can't answer on grounds of.
However,
but he can't just not show up, which is what he's done.
Okay. McGahn was given carte blanche by Trump during the Mueller investigation to tell them whatever they need to hear. And there's a great deal of testimony in the unreleased grand jury minutes of the Mueller investigation that the Senate, that the House Democrats are trying to get their hands on, and they've gone to court to get them. If they get those minutes, they could ask him and articulate what is in those minutes about how Trump intended to block the Mueller investigation and tried to steer it off, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And that's in there. That was the basis of Mueller's conclusion that he was trying, there was efforts to basically obstruct justice. And if they can just read it off and he says no comment and then read off the next one, that'll have a dramatic effect.
I would also like to add that this is one judge who has made an opinion. We all know what's going to happen. It's going to go to the courts. They're going to appeal. It'll go to the Supreme Court and probably have a 5-4 decision saying, no.
Interesting case, though. The White House, of course, arguing that McGahn and other witnesses have absolute immunity from testifying. And the judge in this case, Ketanji Brown Jackson, wrote, stated simply, the primary takeaway from the past 250 years of recorded American history is that presidents are not kings.
Yes, she said that.
Yeah, this means they do not have subjects bound by
important.
Loyalty or blood whose destiny they are entitled to control. Of course, McCann was in the Mueller investigation.
And this McGahn case, is this with regards to the Mueller investigation or is this with regards to the Ukraine situation?
Mueller. No, Mueller. They were before September and the whistleblower stepping forward, they were focusing on obstruction of justice as documented in the Mueller report. And this goes back to that. So this was what they had before the Ukraine thing even came public.
I want to point out that if the Democrats had done this a lot earlier, like a month after the Mueller report came out, we'd be almost through appeals right now. We'd have a decision. So once again, even this is a favorable
ruling. Well, the subpoenas went out right away.
No, 4 months after the Mueller report.
Closer.
If they came out right away saying we're going to go investigate.
Oh, that's positing.
Right.
Yeah. That's positing, of course, that it didn't get to the Supreme Court.
No, this will go to the Supreme Court, just like the tax one is now. Yeah. But I don't think it's a given that it's a 5-4. That court is made up of originalists. And that means they have to recognize separation of power in some way. It's not going to be a easy political decision.
At risk of my life, I can say I don't agree with you.
Oh, boy.
And the reason is it's originalist when it's convenient for these guys. Otherwise, forget about it. You're talking as if these guys are philosopher kings who stick with what they say.
Well, the one example we have where it was not comfortable to be an originalist was Medicare. Yeah. ADA, which was Obamacare. And the ruling was in favor of the Constitution.
Yes.
It was in favor.
And Roberts,
so that's the only evidence that exists now.
Well, yes. And Roberts did the right thing in that case. Nevertheless, I think it was a one-off.
We'll have to wait and see.
You could be right.
Yeah. Well, the White House press secretary said, quote, this decision contradicts longstanding legal precedent established by administrations of both political parties. We will appeal and are confident that the important constitutional principle advanced by the administration will be vindicated.
And she got her law degree from Trump University.
I don't know. It should be also pointed out that the judge in this case, Judge Brown Jackson, is an appointee of President Obama.
I don't know that that's important. The real issue here is executive privilege, and that has not been decided. This case did not take that up. What is executive privilege? When can it be evoked? Who has it? Under what circumstances? And none of these cases really get to that. But the bar, Department of Justice is incredibly sloppy. They have lost way too many cases. Yes, they may win at the Supreme Court level.
They're gonna
win
at the Supreme Court.
Consistently at the lower level, at the U.S. District and appellate level.
Well, I mean, the Justice Department is being used as the lawyer for the president, which is not what their role is.
Exactly.
Their role is to uphold the Constitution.
So they're using these crazy arguments.
Yes. Come on.
Yeah, he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and nobody can investigate.
Yeah. That was a judge's question, and the lawyer answered. Yes.
Exactly.
Come on. You know, Mitch McConnell, who had all kinds of principles when it came to an Obama Supreme Court appointee, right now he's saying, I would vote the day before or something like that, you know, to put our candidate on the court.
Well, this is all about the courts. This has always been about the courts for the Republicans. They know as long as they can keep Trump in office, they can reshape the federal bench and the Supreme Court.
Now, that's interesting because on this panel just a moment ago, Rosemary said it doesn't really matter that the judge in this case was an Obama appointee, but apparently this panel's been crowing about judge appointments for 2 years now.
I've been saying all along that, you know, the idea becomes ridiculous of, you know, these people have been appointed, they've been vetted, They know what they're going to say, and they are you know, just tools of the Republicans.
So does that go? So does that go for the Republican for the Obama appointees too? No. Or no? They're all impartial.
No, well, no, they're much more impartial.
Right.
Oh,
I think the Obama appointees were vetted for their ability to interpret the law and to do their job. These folks are being vetted for being anti-choice, anti-gay rights, pro-business, regardless of the impact on the environment. They're being vetted in a certain way so that all of their decisions come down on the right.
All you need to do is
take a look at them, Ray, and look at their resumes and look at who these people are. Well,
look at
I'm
their faces.
Not going to go that far. I mean, look, we almost had one from this area, and who's not going to be Tom Marcel, almost became a federal judge.
Right, and Senator Gillibrand invoked her authority and recognized right to block that the blue slip, something like that.
I don't know that the blue slip. We should probably explain it. Everybody from the same state, if somebody's appointed, they can put in a blue slip, which means
no,
you ain't going to get it.
Which McConnell also is disregarding. There's no question that judges are being considered who never would have been considered in the past.
These are even
the ones that does not count the Supreme Court. Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, much as I wish they were not there, are qualified to be there. And the other thing to consider is that politically they have to take a look at, as Roberts, we think he does, at the court's independence.
The legacy.
That if they are regarded as appointees of Trump, then therefore their rulings are not as credible, they're not as enforceable, and the court as a whole weakens. So it's in their own self-interest to look like at least that they're being impartial. Right.
And on top of that, there's plenty of history where judges have been appointed and everybody thought they were going to be this way, and they have been the other way.
Come on, don't bring me
David
back.
Souter.
don't bring me back to the Roosevelt administration. You know.
I'm talking about Judge Souter.
I do think that Judge Roberts, first, he was a Bush appointee. He does not define himself by Donald Trump, and I think he wants to define the court as the Roberts court, not as the Trump court. So hopefully we'll see some decisions that come through that will be surprising. I mean,
keep dreaming.
They've got to do gay rights. They've done so far, right?
Gay rights and Obamacare.
Right, but they have a new case about religious freedom or the freedoms of somebody to use their religion to discriminate against LGBT people. And that's going to be an interesting case to see how that is decided. There are other ones. There's ones about choice as well. And so, you know, I'm hoping that Roberts wants to define this court as the Roberts court and not as the Trump court. But well, we have to wait to see.
But on these cases involving the McCann subpoenas and tax records of Trump being made available to the House of Representatives, et cetera, it's the timing of all these. When will they make the decision if they take the case up at all? And will impeachment roll on? You know, Devin Nunes is there fighting to make this thing happen quickly, and it looks like Schiff is going to do it. I mean, people, it looks like it's going to happen fairly quickly. So if the courts don't act, then it won't even matter. It'll be moot.
Right. Yeah. Right. But it'll matter for the future because there'll be other cases. Cy Vance wants these records.
But if the impeachment happens and the trial is conducted and the president is acquitted, and then the court acts. It won't need to act.
Well, he can, what's to say Trump can't get impeached again?
Well,
it could easily happen.
Well,
you mean in his second term?
Right.
Yeah.
Easily.
Well, technically,
if the Dems take over the Senate.
Technically,
you still need 67 to convict.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's going
to
happen.
I'm waiting for the letters to come rolling in.
Oh, yeah?
Because of something that Rosemary said just a few seconds
ago. What was that?
Well, about the two judges who were competent to be on the court.
They are. They're smart. Academically, they're more than qualified.
Do you think Judge Thomas is qualified to be on the court?
Him, I have more. I believe at the time, yes, he did measure up to the bar.
He had academic
credentials.
Yeah, he passed the bar association's reckoning, if I'm not mistaken.
Now they're taking the bar association out of the vetting process.
Yeah, they think the bar association is a liberal hack. Oh my goodness!
It's, the Federalist Society now has more impact.
Yes, more has more
it's,
sway.
It's also not just academic credentials. It's they're there testifying for hours. And they ask them about every single case in the history of the country, and they can tell you the page number, this line, according to this. I mean, it's amazing what the nominees from both parties do in those hearings in terms of showing how knowledgeable they are about our law.
But now, and they're fighting it by saying not even answering a question like, is the Brown case, Brown versus Topeka, is that good case law? No, I can't tell you. Come on. So
But I'll tell you my opinion on these other ones.
Yeah, crazy.
Well, when you're in a confirmation hearing, you don't want to then have to recuse yourself from something by opining on a case when congressionally asked about that. I mean, that's
desegregation of schools. You can't go out on a limb on that.
Long-standing precedent not to talk about existing cases. We have to take a break here. Rosemary Armeo is here. She got here late, but she's really been a good contributor. Mike Spain, Libby Post, J.P. Miller, Alan Shartok.
Good contributor.
And you, panel at WAMC.org is the email address. There's another Supreme Court ruling that happened yesterday concerning Donald Trump, and we'll get... All right. You want a lozenge?
I hit the mute button.
We'll get to that here particular ruling in a moment. You are listening to The Roundtable on WAMC Northeast Public Radio.
Wake up from your paths of glory. Nobody heard of.
That's Jesse Malin from the new album Sunset Kids. They'll be playing Helsinki Hudson on December 7th, helsinkihudson.com. This is The Roundtable, also a music program. 9:34 here on a Tuesday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. Roundtable panel in full swing now. Mike Spain is here, formerly of the TU, Libby Post, a political consultant and lobbyist. The Empire Reports, J.P. Miller's here. Yay. Investigative journalist Rosemary Armeo is here. And WAMC's Alan Shartok. Of course, you can join the conversation by emailing us at panel@wamc.org. And Alan, we have some letters.
We do. Paul wrote and said, attorney-client privilege. Attorney-client privilege doesn't apply if you're committing fraud. And the second point is that McGahn works for the American people, not Trump. I guess he worked for the American people, not works. You see, there's a good example of what you're talking about. So if anyone deserves attorney-client privilege, it's us. Good try. And there you go. And if you're putting, you know, a little bit in an envelope for WAMC as your year-end gift, just go to it. I won't
object. Yeah. And what's that zip? 12206?
You sure?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Okay.
318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York. It'll get there that way, too. Anyway, McGahn is the subject, and it's signed by Carroll. According to lawyers' professional responsibility, an exception to the attorney-client privilege is when the client is engaging in fraudulent or criminal activity. This is the second letter on this. What's the matter with you guys?
Are
you
nothing. Making... No, we're wrapped with attention.
Why? Remember in school when somebody was playing around in the back and you, Mr. Spain, would you like to show something to the class?
Passing notes.
No, yes. Teacher.
Okay.
How this exception may or may not exception may or may not testify in the executive privilege is still a question. Thank you for extending this part of the roundtable. Well, we're not. This isn't the extension.
Thank us when we get to 10:50.
The extension goes later.
Yeah, okay. That's the third half of the program.
Very good.
Right, like
we call it bonus time.
Yeah, like in the Kaminsky file. Matt says, point of information on Don McGahn. Don McGahn, as White House counsel, represents the office of the president, not the person of Donald Trump. As such, per the court decision in U.S. versus Nixon, traditional attorney-client privilege do not apply. Claims of executive privilege do not forestall compliance with subpoenas. Disclaimer, I am not an attorney, nor do I play one on TV. And that's from Matt.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, the ruling made that clear, is that you just can't ignore a subpoena from Congress, which is what McGahn did.
You can say nothing, but you have to go.
Yeah, you can go and take the Fifth Amendment. You can plead executive client privilege. You can plead executive privilege, which, as I say, is still undefined. And that may set off another fight, but you have to go there.
And the question, of course, is how many of these people want to go but are scared of the president on the one hand, you know, and don't want to do their responsibility on the other? I think a lot of them want to go. So if you give them the incentive for going and the subpoena and other things, maybe they'll go.
Well, you know, Bolton interested me because he didn't say anything about I will go when it's completely litigated out to the final step, which would be a half a year at least. So why isn't he calling up Adam and saying, hey, I'll see you next week?
Because of his $2 million book deal.
Yeah.
I really would
like
to.
That would help his book deal.
I would like to start a boycott against that book. If that's really it, if it is as it's portrayed that he's not giving information that would be of use to the Republic right now in order to increase the sales, why would we buy that book?
Oh. I think he was inviting a judge to tell him to testify. I think he wants to talk.
So isn't this it? I thought, okay, there it is.
Well, it's not his case, though. He needs a judge to say, you need to testify, and then he's going to be.
I think Bolton is a hardcore Republican conservative through and through. And he, although he hates Trump, I think he now hates Trump now that he's not working for him. He is a member of the team. And if he goes out and takes Trump down, he will be, excommunicated by the conservative Republican crowd.
You are so right. Hoping for redemption from him is the same as hoping that it would come from Mueller. It was never going to happen.
Well, Trump, I mean, Mueller was never a never-Trumper, but perhaps now Bolton is a never-Trumper or has become a never-Trumper because of the way he was summarily dismissed by the president.
I think JP's got it right, that he may not like Trump, but Trump represents something that he likes very much, just like Barr likes what it is, strong, king-like presidency.
And I'd like to say just one more time, the Mueller affair was a deep disappointment to many of us. I think Mueller could have had more guts than he had in laying it all out.
Yeah. And I especially am angry that we said, oh, isn't that great? It's such integrity, such discipline that he's not letting any information out. And it's information coming out is always a good thing. And that proved it to me again. If we had a hint of what was going on, I don't think it would have ended up the same way.
I think Bolton's going to run for president.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. That's interesting.
I think that's what this book deal is about, keying up. I think that's where he wants to go. No, not in 2020. I think you'll see him in 2024.
Libby, that has been rumored. When you look at the odds of the next Republican nominee for president, Bolton is always a name on there, and I'm always puzzled by that. I said,
well, he's very charming.
Well, I wonder if he'll have to shave his mustache.
So in 2024, it'll be Bolton versus Andrew Cuomo.
Well, AOC.
No. Please.
Depends on how the schism in the Democratic Party works out, JP. Well
done.
Let's
see what happens in the Queens Democratic Party in 2020.
Niels.
Are you making a prediction? Do you have some thoughts?
No, I just think that nobody's safe. You know, all these new congresspeople, in order to cement their position, they have to get reelected in 2020. Mm-hmm. And she has made people very angry. And so they'll probably run somebody against her.
The Democrats.
Yeah. She'll be primaried, whether it's from her left or it probably won't be from her left.
Yeah, because there's nobody there. That's from the communist.
Center. But the other part of this is that we have to look at what she's been able to deliver for her district.
Not Amazon.
I don't know.
They do have a pro-Amazon Democratic candidate running against her saying, I'm the Amazon candidate.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was the Post that had a story this morning. It was either the Post or the Daily News.
They hate her.
About all the hate mail that Cuomo got after the Amazon deal fell through. And one woman wrote, "You've been bested by a bartender."
So there are
plenty of people in the political stratosphere who would like to see her gone.
This is interesting semi-prognostication, Libby. If, in fact, the Democrats primary AOC and she loses, does she run as an independent?
And by the way, she doesn't lose. She's very popular.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
And by the way, she's a rock star.
She shows up
anywhere in America and she gets the crowds.
Right, but what about in her district? That's the issue.
Well, she beat a veteran Democrat.
I know, but is she Is she now delivering for the district? That's
well,
my question.
Well, you know, that's spoken as a true political scientist.
There are people in Queens who were just dreadful. It was a dreadful idea of Amazon coming. They were scared of it.
Yeah. I know. I get it. I get it. So we'll see. We'll wait and see what happens.
I just have one thing to say, Libby, and I hope that you take it the right way.
What, darling?
You're wrong.
You know, you've told me that before,
yes.
And I've lived through
in
it.
In class, out of class.
Yeah, I've lived
and
through
now
it.
You've far exceeded anything that I've ever done in my life. So it's extraordinary.
Sure.
What you've done.
Okay. Fine. Okay. Go back to reading the letters, honey.
Neil says,
"I love it." Libby Post, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for being here.
I'm glad you're calling me honey, because if it had been the other way around,
all right,
the mail would be.
I know, second the motion. Read the letters.
Just read the letters.
Neil says, "Judges. Most people think Republicans are appointing conservative judges to advance traditional conservative values, such as small government. While it is true that most of these judges hold conservative social values, they are decidedly not conservative in two areas, namely the power of the executive branch of the government and the power of the state with respect to individual rights. These are the real reason these people are being appointed and confirmed." I agree with that. All right.
I think it all has to do with abortion.
Mm-hmm. Abortion.
If you're against
rights.
Abortion, gay rights, yeah, you get on. I don't think it's the other stuff.
It's all it is.
Yeah.
It's all it is.
Yeah, it is. No, but
and
is
then
social,
also,
social
I think
issues.
The other and the other part is race and
anti-immigrant is
yes,
a good thing
anti-immigrant, but also wanting to uphold some of the more racist laws in our country.
Hence Brown versus Topeka.
Hence this court overturning the Voting Rights Act and saying you don't have to pay attention to it anymore because we're okay, and we all know we're not okay.
Roberts, says Marty. Roberts allowed unlimited corporate money in elections. He gutted the Voting Rights Act. He refused to end gerrymandering. All of these things help Republicans. Please stop, in capital letters, stop pretending he is some moderate institutionalist because he didn't gut Obamacare. He's a party loyalist when it really counts. That's from Marty, and Marty is correct.
Somebody agrees with Alan. Good, good.
Well, Marty is correct,
coming.
And so is Alan. But the thing is, in order for him to protect the Republican Party and to protect the power of the court, he's going to have to make some compromises. I think that's what his Obamacare vote was.
I agree with you.
I think he has to.
I agree with you.
He's got to make some moves. He cannot just strictly say, oh, tee-hee, here we go, Republicans.
He thought he was saving the court.
Roberts was nominated by George W. Bush, who ran on, he wanted to have a constitutional amendment defining marriage between a man and a woman.
Right.
And then his court legalized gay
marriage.
Rights. I would say that he's got some credentials as being somewhat moderate.
Okay, that court legalized marriage. It did not legalize gay rights.
Same-sex marriage.
There are two. It's two distinct different things. We can get married in any state in this country, and we can be fired for who we marry in the majority of states in this country.
Well, here it is at 9:45. What do you think that means?
Well, let's take a break. Let's do one more letter, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll move on.
And we heard from Mike from Kingston, who said, Supreme Court, if I may remind the panel, the Supreme Court just allowed Sandy Hook parents to sue gun manufacturers.
Right.
I would not vilify this court that quickly. Mike from Kingston.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org. Keep them short. panel@wamc.org. Mike Spain, Libby Post, J.P. Miller, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok on the panel. Ray is in for Joe for the foreseeable future, and we'll take a break. Be back.
I think I heard the last of your goodbye.
From his album Sunset Kids, that's Jesse Malin on the round table. It's the round table panel. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, J.P. Miller, Libby Post. Who else? Who did I leave out? Mike Spain, the retired Mike Spain. Hiya, Mike. 9:48 is the time. We're in a kind of a court frame of mind. The Supreme Court is shielding President Trump's financial records from House Democrats for now. The delay announced late Monday allows the justices to decide how to handle the House subpoena and a similar demand from the Manhattan District Attorney at the same time. The House's quest for the records is not part of the ongoing impeachment inquiry, but the court's action probably means Democrats will not have the records before an expected vote on impeachment, which is supposed to happen by the end of the year. At least that's what the thinking is. The justices are giving Trump until December 5th to file a full appeal of a lower court ruling calling for his accountants to turn over the records. There they go again. Right, Alan?
Right. And I have a question.
What?
It's not quite on the subject. Here's the question. You know when you get a new car, you can charge your phone by just laying the phone on the pad in the car.
No, I don't have a car like that.
Okay, well, I do.
All right.
But I can't.
Out of my pay grade.
Exactly.
Okay, what do you need, honey?
I want to know.
What do you need?
I want to know whether you put the phone on its back or its front.
No,
on
its on its back.
That's related
yes, not
to
the
Trump's
front.
Taxes.
Not glass down, back down.
For God's sake!
What else can your car do, Alan?
I wonder if it didn't charge this morning.
Well, we do have an expanded roundtable, so we can talk
about it.
Well,
about
I want to bring up cookie recipes in for Christmas. I mean, if we're going to do this.
Well, if we're doing this, get me my bottle out of my
drawer. Let's
because
go,
I've had
Ray.
Enough,
Yeah, but anytime you want some electronics.
Go to you.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court. Let me reiterate this now that we've dispatched the car charging deal. The Supreme Court is shielding President Trump's financial records. There was a decision yesterday. Trump has until December 5th to full appeal of a lower court ruling calling for his accountants to turn over his tax records. Does anybody?
This is a procedural matter. They're holding things steady until the president formally requests the court to take up the case, which it will. It took up. He's already asked for them to look at his New York State related case. This is related to that. They have until December 5th, and the court's going to hear it. Does the president have to give up his tax returns?
Right.
And
won't
be decided until June.
Right. Hold the phone.
You're not going to hear an answer until June.
Hold the phone, he says. Well done.
Hold the phone. Oh,
look, here's what's happening on that court. You got your five conservative judges. They're sitting around saying, how are we going to get this done without looking?
There were no dissents on this.
Without looking, well, you know, I think that's right.
I also think that some may think that this tax return thing is a negative thing for the president. I actually think it could be a positive thing because I think it's a big distraction for the media. They are obsessed with the tax returns. And I can't imagine any voter saying, you know why I voted for Pete Buttigieg? Because Trump didn't release his tax returns.
It doesn't
move the needle for voters. And if this is happening in June, July, August, in the middle
of
the presidential election.
The impeachment hearings we had didn't move the needle either.
Yeah, right. The polls are coming out exactly. I think it's just simply the court is saying that the matter of whether a president has to, by law, releases taxes is an important and worthy of review by the highest court, and that's what this represents. It's just
this is
holding
about,
it all. This
goes back to whether or not we have an imperial presidency. You know, the courts and the Congress was clear in 1973 that we don't, and Nixon had to leave because he acted the same way. And one can only hope that we'll have the same outcome here. That no. This is not an imperial presidency. The federal district court judge just said that he's not king. So we'll see. But I agree. I don't know if this is going to move people. You know, what I think will move people is if we talk about kitchen table issues. That's what will move people.
Well, this could be the fodder for kitchen table discussions. Because if in June the court rules he must release them and somehow they become public, which I imagine they would pretty quickly, either leaked or and somehow entered into evidence and become public, it could reveal another – it could just be more documentation that he is a tax cheat.
Right, and a liar.
And that will be
a bread and butter
issue.
And a dastardly guy.
Right.
People
Nobody
say, this
knows.
Is a huge surprise to me.
Yeah. No, not at all. But it would just reveal again. I mean, it would document that he was talking through his hat.
I don't think this is the same as – oh, wait, he's butting. I better shut up.
No, go ahead. Finish your sentence.
I don't think this is the same thing as an imperial presidency. Like, my people don't have to talk to you if I don't want them to. This is keeping your tax records private, which, as American citizens, we all have that right.
Right.
He is, in this case, claiming a right that we all have. That when asked, Congress can ask for it, and he can fight like hell in court, which is what he's doing. It's not the same as his imperial presidency.
I think
you'll get a chance.
I think everything else he's doing, however, is the imperial presidency issue. Okay, and this just adds to it.
Right, I see that. Go ahead, Alan.
Sorry, Alan. Over to you.
We can't wait to hear what you're going to talk about.
So the way this is working in terms of the tax returns, I think, is there have been a number of ideas advanced right here. JP and his cousin PJ have advanced the idea that this whole thing may be a distraction. This because I still can't believe that those taxes haven't one way or another leaked out. Seems very strange to me that that hasn't happened. So here are the things. There's either a poison pill in that taxing, which is so damaging that it will kill them. Maybe Moscow investing or, you know, or this or that. Or he thinks that this thing is just terrific. The more that this carries on, the more people will ignore all the other things that he's doing. And I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. But I think it's more likely the latter. I agree. It becomes a distraction. He's already gotten through all kinds of lies being exposed, and he continues to tell alternate versions of things that have been completely disproven, especially that 53-minute rant he had on Fox and Friends on Friday, where he was talking about how the Democratic National Committee put a server in Ukraine and the FBI is trying to get it back. And even the Fox guy said to him, do you know that, really? I mean, even when they questioned him on the air about complete nonsense, I mean, it sounded like a bizarro world he was ranting.
Well, it is a bizarro world.
So if his taxes show that, you know, if it isn't readily clear that he's a multi-billionaire because of his taxes.
So that's what we want to see? That he did, I think, unless I imagine this, and frankly, fantasy and reality has pretty much melded for a few years now. But
Canasta.
I think he said that he would release his taxes by the end of the year and it'll prove that he's even richer than thought.
Right, yeah, but that's hyperbole that people long ago have stopped holding him to.
Oh, I don't think all people have, in fact.
Well, but the ones who are holding it to him are already going to vote against him anyway.
Well, in fact, the Republicans in this country are with him. It's that simple. And they're not getting off the dime. The Republicans in the United States Senate, because of the Republicans in the country, are also not moving off the dime on all of this stuff. So he's going to be continuing to do what he's done, and he's going to hope that what worked for him the last time will work in the same way this time. It's that simple.
What if it shows he's not a billionaire? Does that matter ultimately?
I don't think it does. I think people are. I mean, it's already been documented that he uses tax breaks and he's gone bankrupt and he's dumped debt on other people and escaped all kinds of settlements.
It's
and
the Republic.
Yeah, the reports can show fraud that he inflated and deflated his worth depending on whether he was borrowing or lending money. It could show campaign finance violations. It can show how he used his charity.
It can become evidence for those charges, which won't be resolved long after he's gone.
No, yeah. But it's white collar crime.
Rosemary, are you telling us that you think even if any of the worst stuff comes out about tax returns, any of those people in the Senate or the Republican majority in this country at 90% are going to change?
Nope, not a bit. And I also don't think he's deliberately using it as a distraction. I think his knee-jerk reaction to any legislation is just fight it.
Yeah.
Just delay, delay, yeah. delay, delay.
It's just like a bill when he was a contractor. He just doesn't pay it until a court orders him to, and then he pays pennies on the dollar.
Now, exactly. If there's a 1099 miss from Vladimir Putin in there, right. then you got
that,
something,
that
right?
Could be something. Yeah.
For services rendered.
Or an oligarch. If it was from an oligarch, that would do it.
To me, far more interesting is what's the IRS doing about auditing his and Pence's tax return? You remember that came up in Congress.
Yes, and there have been accusations.
I'd love to know about that.
There have been accusations that there's interference in that auditing process also.
Right. I think the New York Times has told the story of the Trump taxes. It's not true that it hasn't leaked. A whole bunch of his taxes have leaked, and the New York Times has told the story, and it didn't make a bit of difference at all. Didn't even receive a lot of attention in the journalism world, much less in the wider world.
You want to do in a letter or two before?
It was a big one-day story, two-day story.
It should have been. You know, we keep saying, oh, and here's a blockbuster from the New York Times.
It was a blockbuster for a day.
Nothing happened.
Right. Let's do one or two more here, okay. Alan, and then we'll take a break for news.
Tamara says when he gets acquitted, Trump always runs to the Supreme Court if he's unhappy with the lower court's decisions. And he keeps winning. We all know the Senate will eventually acquit him. Can the House pull a Trump maneuver and appeal the decision with the Supreme Court.
No, you can't appeal an impeachment.
From the Senate? No.
Can't appeal impeachment.
All right. And then we heard from Sean from Cambridge, of all places. Liberal appointees. Good morning, panel. Love the show. But wow, every Obama judge appointed liberal at every level. Trump appointees are all conservative. Do you think the country will look back badly in 20 years on Trump's appointees?
Yes.
The majority of the country is conservative. I think not. Sean from Cambridge.
All right, let's break there. This is the roundtable. It's the roundtable panel. There's plenty to come. Don't go anywhere. We got another cup of coffee. We'll see you in a little bit. Mike Spain, Libby Post, J.P. Miller, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, Ray Graff, in for Joe Donahue. We'll break for news, and we'll be back.
You found the village green.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Tuesday morning. 10:05 is the time. Ray Graff here. It's the Roundtable panel. A great panel here today. J.P. Miller, Libby Post, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok. And, of course, we encourage your limited participation by quick email, paragraph, perhaps, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org is the email address. And before we get to our next topic, Alan, we have some letters to dispense with.
Okay, boss, I'll read them.
10-4.
Okay, here we go. And there are quite a few.
Okay.
All right. Keith says, Roe versus Wade decision, V. Wade decision. A panel, former RNC chairman Michael Steele from a different GOP says that Roe v. Wade will never be overturned by this court because the decision was based upon a right to privacy between a woman and her doctor. If they overturn Roe v. Wade, it opens up Americans to other form of invasions of our privacies by the government, and that's from Keith. Who would like to answer that?
Well, I'll start. I'm sure Libby has something to say, too. They don't have to overturn Roe v. Wade. No. They just have to approve new state restrictions and limitations. And, you have to have, in order to have an abortion, you have to go to a clinic that is hospital approved, which is difficult. They have already, Republicans have, in a decade-long campaign, already wiped out abortion in large parts of the country.
It's more than a decade. I mean, it's been since Roe v. Wade was instituted. I mean, it's,
but this latest push to go into the legislature. Literally,
yeah, I mean, they are looking at, they've been working on the state levels. I mean, you know, Ohio has this slew of unbelievably heinous legislation, you know, criminalizing abortion, putting the woman in jail. If you lose a baby through a miscarriage, you're criminally liable. I mean, all these things that are just patently absurd, the lower courts will say no. Consistently, they'll get to the Supreme Court.
Back. If you lose a baby through a miscarriage.
There's somebody who's put legislation in saying that the woman is criminally liable.
So if the woman has an accident and it induces a miscarriage.
It's more like drug use. If you use drugs and the baby is down.
Right.
Because once you say that a fetus has rights like a living, breathing human being, then
behavioral
it has rights.
Then,
So, then you can you can kill it, you can abuse it.
But to be clear, if a woman happens to have a miscarriage, she's not going to be arrested in Ohio.
Well, you know, the original bills that were put in a number of different states did not parse it out.
Exactly.
Oh.
It did not. They did not.
It and, opens you, know, this you is to about, investigation in all
this
these
is, circumstances. This is about institutionalized misogyny, you know, and bringing about the handmaid's tale in the United States.
Go
it
Libby.
It really is. I mean, you know, he even just appointed some man of color to some panel where this guy is publicly saying women should shut up, but also they should be handmaidens, that all they are vessels for men so that we can reproduce. I mean, you know, this is the kind of folks that he's putting into positions of power. You look at Pompeo, you look at Rick Perry, you look at any of these other guys, they are all anti-choice. They all believe, they're all dominionists. The only reason why they support Israel is for the second coming. I mean, you know, this is not about women's rights. It is about women's rights, but this is about their view of the future and where they see the world going. And they do think the second coming is around the corner. And they do want women to be purely vessels for sperm to reproduce. That's
But you're not really saying that there are no Republicans who think Israel is worth having as an ally of the United States, and only the only you said the only reason.
Well, I'm talking about some of the Dominionists. Okay, yes, there are probably some Republicans who do over. I mean, you know, our foreign policy and the politics in this country has shown that both Democrats and Republicans support Israel's right to exist, and that they are a crucial ally of ours in terms of defense in the Middle East. What this presidency has done has weaponized Israel as an issue in the United States about whether or not you are whether you support Israel has become a litmus test for whether or not you support this president and whether you support his issues and his policies. And they've taken, you know, look, putting the embassy in Jerusalem was something everyone said never to do, and he did it.
Not everyone.
Well, a lot of people.
Every president said they were going to do it.
A lot of people have been against it, and they haven't done it because it just increases the tension in Jerusalem.
Well, of course, it is his attempt to keep his guy Netanyahu in office.
Yeah, right. And he sees Netanyahu as his buddy. But above and beyond
also,
that, the cry
from Roe v. Wade, may I just point out.
Yeah, this is true.
Can you bring it around?
But, well, okay. Well, the thing is it's about for some of these folks who are Dominionists, they want Israel there so that they can be there. It's not about the Jewish state. It's about them being in Israel, the promised land for the second coming of Christ. I know that that sounds crazy, but why don't you look it up?
Okay, but okay.
And that
it feeds right into women. I have looked it up. You're right, but it's not. You have to be very careful about saying every single Republican. It's just not true.
No, the ones who are Dominionists.
Yeah, that's
Pompeo,
right.
Barr.
Going back to what you were
saying
before, according to Newsweek, a right-wing pundit, Clarence Mason Weaver, is one of 35 people who are on this newly formed or recently formed Black Voices for Trump. And he has made numerous remarks about women, including that they should be handmaidens and they should be submissive. And so you're right.
Yeah, I am right. I am right about this. And this goes right back to Roe v. Wade, because they don't want us to have control over our own bodies. It's just that simple.
I'm going to read from a letter from Doug, who says, "Good morning, panel. When will the public realize that the Biden smear job has nothing to do with him running against Trump in 2020? It started before Joe Biden ever announced he was running and seems to be going stronger now when it appears Joe will probably not be the nominee. Trump has made it his mandate to remove every trace of the Obama legacy, and making his vice president appear illegitimate in some way is one of his top priorities." And that's from Doug. What do you think, gang?
Yeah, I think it has to do with wiping out anything good from the Obama era. I do think it started out as he was likely to be the candidate he was going to face, and now he just sees value to it. And the greatest story of perfidy has got to be Lindsey Graham, who's now leading the charge to investigate Biden. And it's unbelievable. And I know cable is going crazy, running loops of his 2015 declaration that Biden, Lindsey Graham's declaration that Biden was as good a man as God ever created.
Yeah.
And now he wants to investigate him. It's just such betrayal.
Yeah.
Well,
wow.
They're going to call, the Republicans are threatening to call Hunter Biden and Joe Biden
they
as witnesses in the trial, the impeachment trial that would likely take place in January.
Well, they should come, because if there's a congressional Senate subpoena, they should honor it, and then they should just go and trash it, just make fun of it. It's already been investigated by reporters who found nothing, so I feel confident that they will again find
nothing. Right, but that becomes a narrative.
Nothing.
Then you'll spend 2 weeks hearing about Burisma.
Anyway.
And why they hired a guy from the U.S. and paid him $50,000 a month. And that's all people
why
need to hear.
Why did they do that again?
Yeah.
Because
they wanted access to his dad, and they didn't get it, evidently.
Yeah. If they speak, they have access to the microphone. One of our listeners sent us a form letter that she got from Elise Stefanik's office, and it was all about why Elise acted as she did during the impeachment hearings. And it's completely a lie. That's why the listener sent it to us. It's, you know, is shutting off access to witnesses. There's no lawyer representation. It's all the stuff that we have talked about here and debunked as untrue, and they keep talking about it.
And this president won't let his people come
up
there. And so we're cutting off meaning the Congress, is cutting off the, you know, the access to witnesses when the president won't let a witness come up there. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't know. Joe Biden can talk, and so I think probably can Hunter. And I don't know why they've been as quiet as they have been on this.
I think if they had Joe and Hunter next to each other, that would be a bad, I think,
optics.
News day for the Democratic Party. I think, you know, Hunter, I think, would have a tough time explaining himself. And I think, you know, Joe, the other night in the debate, he couldn't even get through his opening statement. So I think one of the when you look back at this Ukraine thing, it is, I think, political malpractice for Trump and Giuliani to want to go after Biden. They should have wished that they had Biden to run against.
I'm very fascinated.
I'm sorry. I just want to say that doesn't it remind you very much of Nixon, who had no need for dirty tricks?
Yes, exactly.
He was going to kill McGovern anyway.
Well, you got to remember when that all began, it was Ed Muskie, the senator from Maine, was the most likely Democratic
candidate.
And they used the Canuck letter against him.
Exactly.
And, you know, that trick where he
and then Eagleton, and then you had McGovern and Eagleton, and what they did to him.
So in a way, they helped McGovern get the nomination, and he was the easy one to beat.
Right.
But by the way, Rosemary, you mentioned, I'm just asking you about this, that it looks like Biden won't be the nominee. Somebody tell you that?
No, but I definitely don't think it's a given.
No, it's not a given. You're absolutely right. And now with these other people.
I think back in the summer when
so
the
Trump
Ukraine,
succeeded? Yeah, I mean, he helped.
I think
knock
he's Biden trashed
out as number
Biden.
One.
Yeah. I think. And Biden has been his own bad enemy, too.
Sure,
you mentioned, JP, his debate performance. It wasn't just this week. He's been horrible consistently.
But at the time, he was polling ahead of Trump in the key states. He was taking those blue collar Democrats that Trump relied on. He was, they thought, the threat.
Yep.
We also heard from someone, Rick. Good morning, friends. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving. Isn't that nice?
Thank you, and the same to you.
I think you're all missing something in the Mueller report that Adam Schiff has not. Though Mueller did not press any charges or recommend them, he did say it was up to Congress to do so. Adam Schiff is going to use items in the Mueller report in the impeachment charges. All true. Thank you, Rick. All right.
You okay?
No.
You tired?
No, what's the matter?
Well, no, I'm not tired. I'm just thinking about all kinds of things at the same time.
All right. Well, let's focus. Let's get through this 45 minutes here, and let's just blast through it. Have as good a time as we can.
You're so right, Ray. Yes.
Focus.
George says, testimonial privileges do not relieve one from the obligation to comply with compulsory process. You must appear and raise any available objections to questions. The objection may be accepted or rejected by the panel. The remedy to a recalcitrant witness is a citation for contempt and judicial intervention to compel answers if the claim is invalid. And that's from George.
Yep, that's what the judge ruled.
Kevin says, who knew? Whoever thought that players from Queens would be the focus of a national discussion? Trump, Cuomo, Ocasio-Cortez?
Perhaps she was the most surprised.
Don says, executive privilege. Dear panel members, am I doing okay?
You're doing great.
Okay.
Doing great.
Dear panel members, executive privilege is intended to protect the nation from breaches of national security, not to protect the president from scrutiny. And that's from Don.
Well, that is true. That's the whole issue. It has never been defined, which is why each president can use it in the way he wants. That's why these cases are so important.
Well, let me ask you this, everybody this. Do you think a president should have the right and the opportunity to bounce some ideas off his immediate advisors and just sort of talk freely without worry that it's going to end up in some congressional testimony? You think he should have that protection to be able to just speak freely? And
it sounds so reasonable when you say it that way.
Remember when Nixon?
That sounds very reasonable,
Nixon
Mike.
Said we could raise the money to pay off the burglars, you know, and quiet them, but that would be wrong. He knew that it might come back to haunt him.
You know, the issue is that yes, you should be able to have conversations and air things and come to conclusions, but you can't. You can't have conversations in the White House, or you shouldn't have conversations in the White House that are about criminal activities. Well, that's the dividing line.
I would go beyond that. If you look at freedom of information and freedom of meeting laws, which apply not to the executive but to the legislative branch, no, you can't have those. You can talk only in executive session on very prescribed matters like buying property, legal cases.
Of course.
But you can't have just free-ranging discussions.
That's
right. For the public to participate in. No one said democracy was not messy and complicated. So the answer to your question is, while it seems reasonable and business executives want that,
for the president to have confidential conversations?
He should not. Mm-hmm. There is nothing confidential when he's talking to his advisors mm-hmm. about policy in the U.S.
Well, Ryan said, hello, panel. I disagree with Libby and Rosemary with the idea that AOC is unelectable in her district.
I didn't say that.
No.
You
didn't.
Nor did Libby.
No, nobody said it. What she stands for is what the majority of people stand for. Green New Deal, Medicare for All, and the list goes on. She's a part of a movement of people, a new age of progressives, and that's from Ryan. Okay, so Ryan, the panel took some exception, the fact that we were discussing whether AOC might have an opponent, and there's an attempt to force her out, right? Isn't that right?
Yes.
That's right. Yes.
Okay. Jim said, rope-a-dope. The president loves the rope-a-dope. He will fight the release of his taxes, and as we wait for the smoking gun, it won't be there, and he will deliver another knockout blow and more exhaustion for the republic. Says he, I'm the most investigated president in history, and there is never any there.
You remember the rope-a-dope, right?
Yeah, sure.
Ali Foreman.
I remember rope-a-dope.
And Foreman just wailed him for, 6 or 7 rounds, and he roped-a-dope, and then he said, it's my turn, and Ali took him out. The most fearsome fighter on the planet, Foreman was at the time.
Yeah, what year was that?
74, I think. Yeah.
It's a crazy strategy, but it worked. To sit there and get pounded for 7 rounds, forget about that. I wouldn't
who
like
got
that.
Pounded?
I
wouldn't.
Ali.
That was the rope-a-dope. And Ali, I'll tell you what, he was something. He was a smart cookie, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paula says, Gallagher, is it true that the lawyer for Gallagher works for the Trump Organization? If so, why has this not been brought up as a conflict?
We're talking about Edward Gallagher, the Navy SEAL, who
right.
mm-hmm. was convicted of posing with a corpse of an ISIS soldier, and then was reinstated by an order of the commander-in-chief.
And the defense secretary, Mark Esper, declared Monday that President Trump ordered him to stop a disciplinary review of a Navy SEAL accused of battlefield misconduct, an intervention that raised questions about America's commitment to international standards for battlefield ethics. Esper's comments are the latest twist in this case of Edward Gallagher, chief petty officer, at least for the time being, which led to a conflict between Trump, armed services leader, over military discipline. He was acquitted of murder in the stabbing death of an Islamic State militant, but he was convicted by a military jury of posing with a corpse while in Iraq in 2017.
So what is Trump up to?
He's long said that he wants a more confrontational, badass military. And he's spoken out against the Geneva Conventions. He doesn't believe in police holding the head of suspects as they duck into a car. He's just be brutal and be forceful. He's a bully and he wants his forces to act that way.
Is there an electoral strategy here? In other words, I'm going to try to get
Blue Lives Matter, stand up for cops and law enforcement in the military. Sure. Yeah. Sure there is.
At the end of the day, he's commander-in-chief, though, right? We can agree on that.
That's correct. But ordinarily, a disciplinary matter such as this one would not have made it up to the commander-in-chief. And it's handled. There's plenty of courts and procedures and precedent for handling it. But the interesting thing to me about this is it never even got on the president's wavelength until the supporters of Edward Gallagher, during the time that he was court-martialed, started appearing on the morning show at Fox. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly the president started tweeting about it, and pretty soon he stepped in.
Yeah.
And,
it was Bernie Kerik who started to make
right.
the appeal.
That's right. Bernie Kerik.
Yeah.
No.
Remember him. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
an old associate of Rudy
Giuliani. I was thinking about it this morning because one of the things we talked about Giuliani's security company, and I'm thinking, well, I wonder if Bernie Kerik is there.
Yeah.
You know, so...
There's nobody to like in this story. You don't like Gallagher. He's awful. Not the kind of soldier that I think should stand for America. You don't like Spencer, who is trying to enforce discipline by himself going outside the chain of command. That doesn't seem right. And I didn't like, if it's true, the deal that he offered the White House. Now everybody's denying there was such a deal. Esper is standing up for his own rights, which is okay, but it isn't very noble. And he said, I'm just following orders. When Trump told him to let the guy off the hook, he did.
He said he had no choice, but he'd have to resign if he didn't honor what the president told him.
And yeah, I think I would admire him if he resigned, which he did.
Well, he could have done that.
Yeah. This is like,
so there's nobody to like in this
story.
Yeah,
this is like the first time a president's ever done this to get, I mean, in modern history, to insinuate themselves in a disciplinary action in the armed services. Usually it's kept separate, like you were saying before, and that the president respected the process that went on and respected the decisions.
Truman MacArthur probably is right up there, but
You know, it's really something for him to do what he did. And yes, it all came from Fox, but nonetheless, it's a disrespect of the military process.
I sure hope we're going to talk about Giuliani at some point, but in any case, Jim has written a letter saying, equal time rule, doesn't the division in our country all circle back to the repeal of the equal time rule? Mm-hmm. If all a segment of our country only hears one side of any story, how would anyone react? Jim from Wappingers Falls.
Well, that only affects the broadcast networks. The cable news, Twitter, Facebook, the internet in general, were not covered by the equal time rule. So,
But I think he's wishing that the rule had been expanded rather than dropped.
Yeah,
Mike.
And I like to see that being enforced.
But isn't that a governmental
intrusion?
Don't do that. Isn't that a governmental intrusion on something that should be a personal responsibility? It is your responsibility, Mike Spain, to look into things and get a big picture accept things at face value.
Ethical media organizations do that. It's the unethical.
No, I'm saying as a private citizen.
Well, yes,
all of us. Is it not incumbent upon us to not accept things at face value and to educate ourselves?
Isn't it incumbent upon our government to make sure that we're not being fed propaganda?
No. First Amendment.
I'm in favor of the equal time rule. I thought it was the right thing to do, and I think it should have been.
But it's immaterial. It would have no impact right now.
It's been dropped. But
it only worked when there were three networks and there was a limited number of places that people could go. It would not work now. Mike is right. How would you enforce
cable,
it at Breitbart or cable or the internet?
Well, I think it can be done through cable. I don't think internet or Breitbart it could be done in. But I think cable news. It could have been.
Censorship would
be difficult to slippery get slope. This court to uphold.
I understand that. But, you know, it had its role
to
play.
It's a principle that should be followed. And
regardless.
Some do follow it. But I think you're throwing a lot on the voter to have a voter do all the research. And
oh, my gosh. Really? I know. Civics? Someone who has to understand what they're voting for?
I completely agree with the obligation and the moral obligation of it, but if you think voters are doing that, they're not. They're looking to people who they trust to tell them.
Right, and the other part of this is I agree, we need to be teaching civics. The problem is that it's one of the first things that gets cut because of tax cuts. We're not teaching civics in schools anymore.
The music and art get cut first.
Yeah, but we're also not teaching civics anymore, and people don't understand how the process works. And they don't have the skills to go and do this research for themselves. So we can talk about people doing it, but if the money isn't there to teach kids from first grade through 12th grade how to do this research, what their responsibilities are, it's not going to happen. And we no longer really teach civics.
Well, I think there's some professors and some teachers who will weigh in and say, you know what, we do in our school.
Well, I think by and large, the Republican attack on public education that began decades ago has brought about what we see now, which is a dumbing down of America and people not understanding how the process works. People, you go out on the street and you say, if the president's impeached, do you think he'll be thrown out of office? And the majority of people will say yes.
Sure, and there's a strong effort in the media now to correct that misinformation and educate people. But you're right. I mean, people have, for whatever reason, they don't have the Constitution. Most of us wouldn't pass the citizenship test that immigrants are required to pass in order to become citizens.
All right. Any more letters you want to read?
Does it look like I have a letter in front of me?
I don't know. I thought you had one and you don't have one.
Well, no, there is.
Well, we have. You have 30 seconds if you have something you'd like to read.
Something profound.
Otherwise, you know, why don't you sing us one of the Berkshire Ramblers hits before the news?
Okay. George Smith writes, "Dear Libby,
yes.
Although an OWG, OWG is a...
old white guy.
Old white guy. Oh, great.
I'm 1,000.
I think.
I'm 1,000% supportive of your right to control your own body.
Thank you.
Call me uninformed, but what is this Dominion stuff, George?
All right, you have 10 seconds to explain, Libby.
Look it up. Google Dominionism.
Well, I'll tell you, that's a curt answer. All right, that's it. That's where we'll take a break here. This is the roundtable, and let me run down the list while we have 20 seconds. Mike Spain is here. He's retired now. He sits a lot and looks at the wall, but he used to be at the Times Union. A political consultant and lobbyist, Libby Post, is here. Empire Report's J.P. Miller is here. Investigative journalist, Gadfly. Rosemary Armeo is here. WAMC's own Gadfly, Alan Chartok, is here. You want to join the conversation? Yeah, all right, if you must. Email us at panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we'll be right back.
Walk down to the Hudson.
From the album Sunset Kids, that's Jesse Malin, who will be at Helsinki Hudson on December 7th. It's the Roundtable, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue, 10:34 on a Tuesday morning. Kind of nice out there right now. I understand, however, that there is going to be a storm that could impact people's Thanksgiving travels. Not necessarily around here, but I think up to 22 million people will be affected by this whopper of a storm out west.
Wow. As long as it isn't us.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get something.
It's coming up
for
New York.
Right.
For Thanksgiving.
The Macy's parade may not have balloons on account of the winds
First
time since 1971.
And there's a Curious George story about that. I read My Little Guy, and it's same thing. The winds will get those balloons.
Curious George.
The woman was seriously injured when one cup.
Wistful times here on the panel. The email address is panel@wamc.org. Chartok cracking the whip, throwing the pile of emails our way.
Good morning, panel. Can Mitch McConnell just not move the impeachment forward the same way he has obstructed bringing forward so many bills passed by the House? Thank you. And that's from Fiona. Now, the answer to that is he could make it difficult, but he has said he's not going to do it, which I find very interesting.
I'm sorry, not do what?
Slow down the impeachment process. In other words, not have the trial.
He can speed it up. He can't slow it down or undo it, because the Constitution is clear that if the House brings charges, the Senate will have a trial. He said that. But then he says, how long does it have to last?
Well, on Monday he said he was at an event in Kentucky. The only prediction I can make is that I can't imagine a scenario under which 67 members of the Senate would remove the president from office in the middle of a presidential election. That is what he said yesterday.
All right. And then we heard from Stephen, who says, Roberts was a nay on gay marriage. Don't give him credit. With Kennedy gone, it would fail today. And Stephen from Hell's Kitchen, New York.
I thought he was pro on that.
No.
No.
No, Roberts was good on Obamacare.
Gotcha.
And Kennedy did.
By the way, you wanted to mention Dominionists. You had looked it up.
Yes, I did. And it's a group of Christian political ideologies that seek to institute a nation governed by Christians based on their understandings of biblical law. And the biblical law that they really focus in on is Genesis 1:28, which is, and God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth.
And Libby is right. This has meaning for women, because men who believe this subscribe to subjugating women. They also believe that they have dominion over the animals, can do anything they want to animals.
And we'll get to that in a moment. But are there confirmed? Thank you very much. And well done. That's two this week. Are there confirmed Dominionists?
Yes.
Okay. Do we know who they are?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Rick Perry.
One of them Rick has Perry, been pointed to Trump's...
Mike Pompeo.
You know.
So if you ask them, are you a Dominionist,
they'll say yes.
Absolutely, yeah. Sign me up.
Huh. Okay, but so we now know that.
I mean, it's interpretive because, I mean, I listened to you read that, that section of Genesis, and I didn't hear, and men shall be dominion over women. I didn't hear that in there.
Over reproduction. And
but I didn't hear that all has, that.
But yeah. that's been since Adam and Eve.
Yeah, exactly. And he shall be your master.
Right.
I believe it's
right
in there.
That was right at the beginning, you know. And the other part of this is that, some people interpret this dominion theology as a mandate for Christian stewardship in civil affairs. That's why, you know, that's where the anti-choice stuff comes from, out of these folks. They want this to be a Christian nation. They see this as a Christian nation.
But just to be fair, there are many other people who, by their Christian upbringing and their beliefs, their Christian beliefs, go into public service, and
I'm not saying that this is every Christian out there. Okay,
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yes.
Not by a long shot, and I know that very well. I mean, it's like saying every Jew is Hasidic, and that's not true either. You know, but right now there are a lot of people in government who believe this, and in high levels of our national government, and that's. That's
now, are these people in large part people you believe to believe this or who have said, I believe this?
No,
this is important.
I've read where they have said, I believe this.
Okay.
That they consider themselves dominionists.
You good on the letters?
We're good on the letters.
Yeah, we're good. Okay. President Trump signed a bill that makes certain acts of animal cruelty a federal felony, saying it's important for the nation to combat heinous and sadistic acts of cruelty, the Prevention Animal Cruelty and Torture Act, Preventing Animal Cruelty and Torture Act, prohibits extreme acts of cruelty when they occur in interstate commerce or on federal property. The legislation expands on a 2010 law that targeted videos depicting crushing or torturing animals, but that did not prohibit the underlying conduct. Under the new law, the underlying acts of cruelty would be a federal crime.
If they're taped.
Well, and not only that, but Ray made a little bit of a quizzical motion when he read interstate commerce.
Yeah.
The only way the feds can say, the Congress can say, this should fall under federal jurisdiction is if you've moved something across a state line.
Or you're on federal property.
Yeah. So.
So this bill, which is, it's great. I mean, I'm not saying it's not important, but it really relates to the acts that happen while people are filming these videos. It's not going to relate to the guy who throws the puppy out the window on a back road in New York State. It does not make that crime
a
felony.
Right?
Yeah, it's state law, and our state laws are rather weak around animal cruelty.
Terrible.
But what's really interesting here, because this is really a smokescreen, because the Trump administration, the Department of Agriculture, has taken every single bit of information about oversight of puppy mills off of the Agriculture Department's website. It used to be right there. You used to be able to get that information, and you can no longer get that information. So they are complicit now in animal cruelty in terms of what happens at puppy mills.
Well, that's interstate commerce.
It is interstate commerce, and we'll see if anybody makes the connection, because those puppies go from Missouri and some other places all over the country. But it'll, you know, the fact of the matter is that this administration has done more to harm animals than they've done to help.
Well, we saw a dog at the White House yesterday.
That's right. Yes. Right. Conan.
Right.
The military dog that went after the ISIS leader was captured. Or
and
killed.
The president couldn't even bring himself to touch the dog.
But he did present a medal to the dog.
That's nice.
And brought him there.
Mike Pence was nice to the dog.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Mike Pence has animals.
Did you hear what Jimmy Fallon said last night?
No.
He said, when Trump said, sit, stay, and roll over, every Republican in Congress started
that's a good
doing
line.
That.
Yeah, that's a good line.
Yeah. I thought that was good.
How about the Endangered Species Act? Well, is that now not a form of animal cruelty? Also?
Oh, yeah. Well, the way they've gutted it, absolutely. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, and I read something about how they're going to privatize the national parks now. They're looking to do that.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, you know, the
what does that have to do with animal cruelty?
Huh?
What does that have to do with
protection of animals?
Protecting the animals that are in the state.
Well, we want to move along because there is something on the front page of the Times this morning that's well worth discussing. Because my next door neighbor across the street from me has been picking up dog poop.
Right. And so this is directly related.
And so
it's about dogs.
And so have I. Mike, you want to bring?
Well,
I'm
a reader, and I was reading Paul Nelson's story on the top of the front page of the Times Union today. Instead of looking at the wall, in between looking at the wall.
You got to take a break from the wall every now and then.
Checking the bingo schedule over the American Legion.
And it's about an apartment complex in Niskayuna in Schenectady County, where they're going to require, they have like 78 apartments where dogs are kept by the owners.
I'm for it.
And they're going to collect DNA samples from all the dogs, and if they find that there's poop that hasn't been picked up properly, they have a contractor. They're going to take a sample, send it out to the contractor, and match it to one of those 78. And if they do get a positive match, the lease requires that this person pay a $300 fine.
And what if they don't get a match? Who pays? This sounds like a ridiculous expense.
Really? Hire somebody
you mean
to pick
it, might
it up.
Be
I'll
a,
take the job.
A secret, stealth dog that comes in and...
There actually are people who...
Give me a pooper scoop. Buy me a nice pooper scoop or a warm orange vest and I'll go do it. That's crazy.
This is
government too far.
Not government. It's the homeowner. It's the lease.
Homeowners, yes.
This is a private property that is requiring this of their tenants who have dogs.
Awful.
And it's a way...
So they are a pet-friendly apartment, which is something.
And people are
not saying no pets.
And people are just opening their doors and letting the animal to go out to do their business. That's just wrong.
I think this is a
major... Let's just shoot them.
Major issue.
I didn't say that.
Not the dogs, but the people.
Don't you hate it when you walked out on the sidewalk and accidentally stepped in something?
Yes, but I'm not going to DNA all my neighbors to find out whose dog did it.
Not the neighbors. The neighbors'
dogs. The dogs, yeah. I think it's nutty.
Do you think this is a violation of the dog's civil rights?
Oh, my gosh.
Try to get a mouth swab from a dog and see what happens.
Yes,
it's not
right.
That hard.
No? I want to see that.
You can do that?
Even our technician is laughing at us. We have gone totally off the rails.
Well, no, I think this is a very serious proposal.
You know what?
Someone's going to see it adopted by the selectmen in Great Barrington, along with fixing some of the bridges which they have let just fall.
How do they know it's the dogs? It could be the dog owners.
On the side. Okay, now that's
the dog owners who are required to pay the $300 assessment.
You can tell.
You know what? Someone's going to write in. The last segment of the roundtable has gone to the dogs. I'm pretty sure of that. So
let's vote on it.
How do we resolve this, Michael?
I think it's a matter of opinion. If you don't like the idea that you have to submit a DNA sample from your dog when you move into this apartment complex, and some others are going to
Or the people across the street from me.
Just pick up.
Just not right.
Then you should choose to live somewhere else if you can find a place that will allow you to have a dog.
What about cats? They poop.
They bury it in litter boxes.
But the real question is, if this is successful, if this rids this apartment complex and those like it from this
scourge of
dog poop,
this
then
just
will people be now saying that the Great Barrington town and village should start collecting DNA samples from everybody who owns and licenses a dog in Great Barrington?
God. I'm sorry, this was on the front page of the Times Union?
This is a talker.
This was on the front
page. The editor of the Times Union uses a term called Golly Martha. This is a story where someone will read it and say, Golly Martha.
More important than the TU, how's High and Lois doing?
High and Lois is still on the back of the TU.
What about Giuliani? I don't get it.
Good segue.
We have 2 minutes left, but yes, you're right.
Well, you know, this guy is now being implicated in a federal investigation, it's unseemly.
Yeah. Investigators, a Washington Post headline, investigators scrutinized Giuliani firm and donations to Trump super PAC as part of a broad probe. Lev Parnas, Igor Fruman in the news again. The U.S. Attorney Office for the Southern District of New York is looking into all of this.
But Giuliani says he has insurance that the president doesn't throw him under the bus like he has thrown so many other people under the bus. He has insurance.
Insurance of what kind? Uh-huh. Something on Donald?
That's what it would appear
yes.
to be.
Well, he's made that very clear a couple of times on cable shows, and then afterwards saying, oh, he was only kidding. But what would fraud say, Alan?
There is no joke. That's what he'd say. There is no joke. Okay. And we heard from Claire, who said, my husband and I just had a conversation with our 13-year-old granddaughter about Locke and Hobbes and their influence on the Constitution. They are teaching civics in Arlington, Massachusetts schools.
Good. Yes.
I'm glad.
My son teaches it. Yeah. But Libby's right. It's not as prevalent and as widespread
then
as
our, it once was. Are teenagers maybe perhaps ready to vote?
No.
16-year-olds?
Yeah.
As in Brookline?
No.
I'll tell you what.
Very bad idea.
You guys are all picking up the slack well.
So is Brookline allowing 16-year-olds?
Well, this is from CBS Boston, and we only have a minute, so maybe we'll bring this up tomorrow. Brookline Town Meeting approves lowering the voting age to 16 by a 142 to 71 vote. It would still need State House approval, so we'll hold off on that one since we only have less than a minute left. Do you have another letter?
I do.
Brief?
Happy Thanksgiving, panel.
Happy Thanksgiving.
With you.
Donald Trump is just a metaphor of his base, the beleaguered white guy who's always being attacked by the liberal elites. Wherever can he find a fight, he will take it on and to perpetuate the cause. Share the drumstick, pass the yams, and that's from Anthony.
Huh? Well, you got one more there, I think. Underneath.
There is, but it's way too long. Okay. But I'll read just the first sentence.
Sweet potato.
Trump, from Terrence, Trump has been consistently taking actions that send a message to others in a position of power that is acceptable to engage in actions that are contrary to the rule of law.
That's it. Thank you very much. That was too long. Well, those who won't be here tomorrow, Libby and company, thank you for being here. Have a great Thanksgiving. You know, my son and I are making White Castle burger stuffing.
Really?
Yeah, I'll tell you how that worked out.
I'm making it.
It's Rick Orlando's idea.
I'm making it in my house.
Wow.
Really?
I'm making the turkey.
Let's take a break. It's the Roundtable on WAMC.